by essentially holding hostage our paychecks while, you know, they fight amongst themselves over political issues is unfair.
Pain mounts as the U.S. government shutdown stretches into the record books. It's Friday, January 11, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Doug Bernardi in Washington. Also ahead, 2018 was a no good, very bad year for Xi Jinping. Trade worries hit the Consumer Electronics Show, and the last of Myanmar's long-necked women. It's all on today's VOA Asia. President Donald Trump and opposition Democrats remain at odds over the president's demand for a border wall with Mexico, a split that has led to a partial government shutdown now in its third week. Mr. Trump believes that delivering on his campaign promise of a border wall is crucial to his re-election hopes. Opposition Democrats feel just as strongly that they need to stop him to show what their party stands for. Before heading to the southern border Thursday, a fired-up Trump excoriated Democratic leaders as being uninterested in stopping crime. And he also once again threatened to use his presidential prerogative to declare a national emergency to go around Congress and fund construction of the wall.
If we don't make a deal, I mean, I would say 100%, but I don't want to say 100% because maybe something else comes up. But if we don't make a deal, I would say it would be very surprising to me that I would not declare a national emergency and just fund it through the various mechanisms.
For their part, Democrats in the House and Senate show no signs of backing down. Senior Vermont Senator Patrick Leahy.
When we talk about national emergencies, we're usually talking about something like 9/11 or something like that. Maybe there's a national emergency he's aware of that all the rest of America is not aware of, and I'd be interested to see what it is.
So the question now on everyone's mind, especially the 800,000 federal employees currently not getting paid, is how and when all of this will resolve. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more on the politics motivating both sides in the shutdown dispute.
Citing a crisis along the southern border, President Trump used a primetime television address to make yet another pitch for his border wall.
Democrats in Congress have refused to acknowledge the crisis, and they have refused to provide our brave border agents with the tools they desperately need to protect our families and our nation.
Democrats oppose the wall and believe Trump is holding the country hostage simply to deliver on his core campaign promise. Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer.
Most presidents have used Oval Office addresses for noble purposes. This president just used the backdrop of the Oval Office to manufacture a crisis, stoke fear, and divert attention from the turmoil in his administration.
The last 2 years, ICE officers made...
Among those watching the president was Texas supporter Janeria Lewis.
It was a plea. I saw a logical plea, and I support it.
But those put out of work by the partial government shutdown are frustrated, including Mike Gazagian in Massachusetts.
By essentially holding hostage our paychecks while, you know, they fight amongst themselves over political issues is unfair. It's unfair to everybody.
Donald Trump fueled his rise to the presidency with a campaign promise to build a border wall that Mexico would pay for. Trump is now under pressure from conservatives to follow through, says analyst Larry Sabato.
Essentially, they said, if you don't push harder for your wall and you don't get billions of dollars to build it, then your base, and we represent that base, won't be there for you in 2020.
Immigration is also a touchstone for opposition Democrats, who morally oppose the border wall and the president's overall hardline approach, says Sabato.
It's about the treatment of immigrants at the borders. It's about the separation of families. This is a human rights issue. It isn't just about border security.
Okay, anymore?
Confronted with historically weak poll ratings 2 years into his term, Trump seems primarily focused on pleasing his base. But that is a risky strategy, says historian Doris Kearns Goodwin.
I haven't seen President Trump move from a campaigning mode to a governing mode. And the base seems to have a magical relationship with him in his mind. And somehow he hasn't tried to move well beyond that. He just simply wants to make sure he doesn't lose them.
Trump believes his path to re-election lies along a border wall that has yet to become a reality.
We can and we will.
Democrats, including many of those preparing to run for president next year, seem equally determined to deny him a political victory just as the 2020 campaign is about to begin. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
As the shutdown lumbers into yet another week, the effects and anger are starting to mount. Thursday, outside the White House, protesters gathered to urge the president, who was at the time at the border, to open up as much of the government as is possible. Our Skylar Ogden stopped by to hear what was on people's minds.
Originally, we are all from China. I'm from Shanghai. But we have been in the United States for several decades, for a long time. So now we are working for the U.S. government. We cannot go to work. We have a lot of things to do. We work for NASA, and we have research. We have international projects, and we cannot work. We cannot even go to the center.
It's caused me to have a lot of sleepless nights. I don't know how I'm going to pay my mortgage. I've got car payments due. I have my insurance and things like that. So it's really made me question my job security. I've talked to my mortgage company already. I've talked to my credit card company. And, you know, they've been okay about it, but it's not going to be for forever. I've already started looking into unemployment, which is probably going to be necessary if it lasts much longer.
Every country needs some level of border security, and the question really seems to be, does a wall actually serve that? And I'm not in a position to talk about how important a wall actually is versus other mechanisms that are being used. Some of the numbers that I hear bantered around indicates that a lot of the drugs do not come in across the border, across the southern border, but by other routes. Some people who are here undocumented have entered legally, and they've just overstayed their visas. So this does nothing to help that out.
Mr. President, it's time to put the folks back to work. You know, this isn't a boardroom of the Trump Towers. You know, this is real life people. This is the federal government. We're not a dictatorship. We're a democracy. And that's the way we should be handling this problem, in the democratic process, and getting the House and the Senate to work on the issue, to get something to his desk that he can sign.
Just a few voices of the many Americans wondering when all this will end. You can read much more on this, our top story, by following us on Facebook, VOA Asia, and at the voanews.com website. These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. Australia's foreign minister says no asylum deal has yet been reached for Saudi refugee Rahaf Mohammed Al-Kunun. Bangladesh police fired tear gas and swung batons as thousands of garment workers demonstrated for better wages on the outskirts of the capital. Indonesia says it will use its new position on the UN Security Council to focus attention on the Israel-Palestinian conflict. And more than 30 people were killed in Afghanistan when Taliban insurgents stormed security outposts. Expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. China has been the focus of much of the world for the past year, as it has been engaged in a trade dispute with the Trump administration, and President Xi Jinping has been promoting grand projects around much of the world. While President Xi may be seen as having had a productive 2018, Curtis Chin, former U.S. ambassador to the Asian Development Bank and Asian fellow at the Milken Institute, tells VOA's Jim Stevenson that he feels Xi actually had the worst year of any leader in Asia.
You know, that might surprise people because, you know, he started the year and still is really probably one of the most powerful leaders in several generations in China. But what began for Xi Jinping as a year where he was, and through his allies, able to lock in the chance to be president for life? Great kudos and from Davos. I remember last year at Davos, Xi Jinping gave a speech where he was going to be the face and voice of free trade and all. The year ended for Xi Jinping with the very real reassessment of some of his great initiatives. The first one, front and foremost, has been his One Belt, One Road initiative, really, which was in some ways positioned as a Marshall Plan for Asia. The Chinese would help build, whether through direct assistance or through loans, infrastructure projects that would really, one belt of roads or one maritime belt leading back to Beijing, was going to be a great thing. And indeed, there is an infrastructure gap in Asia. But by end of year, tremendous pushback to Xi Jinping, both domestically and internationally, on some of his approach to how he's running a terribly difficult job running his nation of 1.3 billion plus people. So from best year Mahathir to worst year Xi Jinping, what a year 2018 has been for China, for Asia. And let's see how all these things play out in 2019. I'm always the optimist, so my hope is that things will get better for all people, Chinese people, Japanese people, American people. But I think the reality is that there continue to be very terrible, I would argue, situations playing out in China, in Rakhine State, in Myanmar, that I think the world needs to come together and address. And my hope is that China, too, we've talked a lot about China, will see the wisdom of taking to heart some of the criticisms of China with regards to are the loans they're putting out with regards to One Belt, One Road really in the interest of the people, the countries they're lending to. This whole issue of debt sustainability versus is this a debt trap? Maybe the truth is somewhere in between. Likewise, you see these reports about really, I think the last numbers I saw were over a million Muslims in China, in Xinjiang. Euphemism is, you know, like re-education camps.
Right.
My hope is that China will see the wisdom of some of the critiques and criticisms, is that if their goal really is to address the fears of terrorism in China, is this the way forward, or actually will in the long term make the situation worse? Versus really understanding what are the concerns, legitimate concerns of people inside and outside of China about China's approach to its own citizens. I think every country needs to look at what they're doing internally as well as externally, and that includes both the U.S. and China.
All right. Curtis Chin, thank you so much.
Always great to be with you.
Happening now in Asia, Asian equities were down across the board after a string of stronger gains. Tokyo's TOPIX fell 1.3%, while Hong Kong's Hang Seng was down 0.4%. In Sydney, losses were less severe, with the ASX 200 down 0.1%. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has returned home after visiting China this week. Neither Pyongyang nor Beijing have provided details about Kim's visit, which comes amid preparations for a possible second summit between Kim and U.S. President Donald Trump. As VOA's Bill Gallo reports, the North Korean leader may be hoping to use the visit to increase his leverage with Washington. VOA's Korean service also contributed to this report.
Kim Jong-un's fourth visit to China in a year. A reminder that despite international sanctions, Kim is not as isolated as he once was. Like his previous meetings in China, this trip is seen as an effort to coordinate ahead of another possible summit with U.S. President Donald Trump.
I think he's looking for reassurance that China is in his corner, that they have his back, that when he goes into a meeting with President Trump, that he's doing so from a position of strength.
That notion is supported by Kim's recent New Year's speech, which threatened a new way forward if talks with Washington don't progress. By going to China, Kim may be reinforcing that threat.
I think it shows that he is not alone, that he has diplomatic support from China, and he cannot be isolated. I think that's the main purpose.
Since the first Trump-Kim summit last year, the U.S. and North Korea appear deadlocked. The U.S. is demanding North Korea take steps to give up its nuclear weapons, while North Korea insists the U.S. first provide sanctions relief or a formal end to the Korean War. But Trump maintains the talks are going just fine.
North Korea, we're doing very well. And again, no rockets. There's no rockets. There's no anything. We're doing very well.
But many analysts, such as former State Department official Robert Manning, are not optimistic.
I think our leverage is diminishing, and I think the Kim visit to China is the latest example.
Kim Jong-un in China may be trying to show the world that even if the U.S. doesn't give him what he wants, he has other options. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Washington.
This news alert from VOA Asia, Sun Pride Foundation and the Bangkok Art and Culture Center will present Asia's second and largest ever exhibition devoted to LGBTQ art. Two organizations announced plans for a continuation of a traveling series first held in 2017. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories. This is VOA Asia.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. You can listen to Encounter following VOA News, either on the radio or online at voanews.com/encounter. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to encounter@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This news alert from VOA Asia, the remnants of Cyclone Pabuk spread over the Andaman and Nicobar Islands. Pabuk was already unusual in being the first cyclone to make landfall in Thailand in 30 years, but more unusually, the first ever recorded in the Gulf of Thailand in January. Big stories coming your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the annual Consumer Electronics Show is underway in Las Vegas. The massive exhibition highlights trends and new products that should change the way that we live, in some cases as early as next week, and in others, years in the future. VOA's Kevin Enix looks at a few of the new technologies that will change the way that we drive.
Some of the highest tech at this year's Consumer Electronics Show is all about keeping you safe in your car. The Iris system, for instance, monitors everyone in your car. It can alert drivers if they seem drowsy or can keep track of babies in the back seat and warn drivers when things look dicey.
Cameras are everywhere today and their number increases regularly every single day. It is literally a public space. Think about it, if you're sharing a vehicle, it is more of a public space, similar to when you walk into a bank or a movie theater or even this space in here.
Other devices monitor drivers' behavior behind the wheel. The Affectiva car camera algorithms work in a way that's similar to online services like Amazon, which recommend products based on browsing habits. Its cameras track drivers' and passengers' activity, recording things that catch their eye in places they stop. The system could offer coupons or discounts at restaurants and other businesses along the way.
Right, we're a captive audience now in what is potentially an entertainment hub. Not always do we want to be entertained necessarily, right? So it's really important to understand what the needs are of the people of the vehicle and how they're reacting to the environment so you can then adapt the experience to those needs.
It's all part of a shift to customize the driving experience, looking to a future where the driver's top priority isn't driving.
But in a world where cars are truly self-driving, there is no steering wheel anymore, there is no human driver anymore, in that fully autonomous future, there is no back seat as such anymore, right? It's basically passengers in a vehicle that's sometimes even by industry referred to as an entertainment hub.
Some other tech is going in the opposite direction, trying to protect drivers' anonymity while helping to keep them safe.
If you compare it to cameras, it has lower resolution, but it's enough resolution to understand what's going on in the car while keeping your privacy. And that's a very good balance, which we believe in.
But whether it's onboard cameras or onboard radar, big changes are coming for cars as trips inevitably become less about driving and more about getting from place to place safely and comfortably. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
Lastly today, for hundreds of years, Kayan women in Myanmar have worn coiled bronze rings around their necks, a symbol of beauty in the area. But now a new generation of women from one of Asia's most distinctive ethnic minorities are choosing not to follow in the fashion footsteps of their ancestors. VOA's Julie Tabo has more.
48-year-old Mutu is a Kayan woman from the Kaya region of Myanmar. For generations, women here have worn bronze rings around their necks and other parts of their bodies. Mutu is one of the few women who knows how to make the heavy embellishments and put them on. The shorter sets are easier to make. Everyone has their own preference. So if someone doesn't like what you've put on, you have to take it off and start over. 83-year-old Maria Ken has been wearing the coiled rings on her neck, wrists, and knees since childhood.
I started to wear the rings when I was 8. My dad told me I looked like a boy. He said, so I'll buy you a gun to hunt as a man. But I said, every girl is wearing the rings, so I want to wear the rings too.
Maria has never removed the rings, even when cooking, eating, or working.
It is comfortable. At first it was hard, but now it's fine. I eat and food goes down.
While wearing neck rings was once expected of all Kayan women, more and more have started to shun the practice. Among them is Maria's granddaughter, 20-year-old Zaza U.
They're heavy and uncomfortable. Also, I don't know much about them. That's why I don't wear them.
What is known is that besides extending their necks, the practice crushes collarbones and causes discomfort when swallowing. Even Mutu admits that safety is a concern.
If you don't make the rings correctly, someone can choke.
Whether safety or changing fashion, many young Kayan women are turning their backs on tradition, even as the old ways bring tourists and curiosity seekers.
When I bring the gap to here, I want to let them know the true story of the people in here. So these people is also my people. So why people are calling them as a like a human soul, graphic woman, like a Badao. But our origin is Kayan.
Cultural analysts estimate that there are now fewer than 100 long-necked women across the whole of Myanmar, down from about 300 to 400 several decades ago. Some wonder if the tourists will still come to buy their wares when the long-necked women are gone. Julie Tabo, VOA News.
The times, they are a-changing. Well, that is our program for today and for this week. As always, and this never changes, we thank you for being with us. We hope you'll be with us again on Monday. And until then, we hope you have a terrific weekend.